Ready for an invasion? It's the Pitch Invaders Podcast. And now, your hosts, Tom Quinlan, Brian Speaks, and Will Blasini.
Yo! Tuesday, November 18th, 2014. Welcome to the Pitch Invaders Podcast. I'm Tom Quinlan. As the voice just said, Brian Speaks to my right, as usual. Will Blasini not in house today, but it's okay because we will prevail and move on.
Want to know the best part about Will not being here?
It's conference finals countdown week, and he's a Red Bulls fan.
No, because look at the microphone right there; it's like dead. I get a nice microphone when Will's not here. It's the only good thing about Will not being here.
What's the only good thing about Will not being here?
Yep.
What's the other?
That's the only one.
Okay.
Everything else makes me miserable. And
you're upset that he's not here.
I'm surprised the sun's even out today without Will here.
Yeah.
I thought the sun.
But it was raining the last time we did a podcast with Will here. It did rain. It was miserable. You haven't been here in a while, though. It's actually been a week and a half since like you and Will have been on the same pod with each other.
No, we were on last Thursday.
But we moved to, remember we had technical difficulties Friday, remember?
So last Tuesday he wasn't here.
We recorded Thursday.
The
full episode didn't get published until Friday.
Yes, because it was abysmal.
Yeah.
No one brought their A game. No one.
But we bring our A game today, and we'll talk a lot about U.S. men's national team stuff with Kyle McCarthy, who's over in Ireland.
I wonder if he would consider Jurgen Klinsmann bring his A game this year. Maybe I'll ask him that question later.
Yeah. Big market tease.
Yeah. Big market tease.
Also, I want to start off with this Boston Globe article. Because why not stir up the pot during the conference finals week a little bit more and tell the entire Metro Boston area, and all of New England, really, that the Kraft family have at least plans to develop a soccer-specific stadium near the South Boston train station.
And for those in the know, you already know this information.
Yeah.
It's well documented. It's talked about every year.
We just need another story just to tell people about soccer-specific stadiums.
The pessimist in me wants to say it's brought up every year, right around the same time they try to get us to buy our season tickets. But no, it's talked about. It's well known.
There's nothing wrong with them to get people more invested and excited about the team and the organization and the possibilities of success that could lie in the future. There's nothing wrong with enticing people that way.
I would just like a little bit more concrete.
Yeah, there's no concrete information.
So, I mean, that's the issue. I mean, I'm not trying to blast the refs. I'm well past that now. I think for the most part, a lot of people are past that. You know, the Revolution have been doing a real good thing all year. You know, this is one of the banner years for the Revolution. They deserve to be where they're at. And with any luck, we're going to go a little bit further, and we're going to be playing LA and Seattle in December. Soccer in December.
God, can you believe we're talking about soccer this late in New England? Oh, it gets you all warm inside and feeling funny. I'm only coming down hard on the Globe right now because, as Brian said, eloquently put, there's no concrete evidence here to show that Mayor Marty Walsh approved the stadium. You know, we had Paul Mariner on yesterday. There's so many implications that go into building this thing. I mean, you got to think about public funding that's going to cost some money here. From what the article I read, it is city-owned land. I mean, there's going to be an auction for it. It's not like the Crafts are, you know, the only horse in this race right now. And there's two things other than the Globe article that concern me when it comes to building the soccer-specific stadium. One is, I don't think the Olympics have any implications on how or when or where this soccer-specific stadium is built. For you people out there that are thinking that the 2024 Boston Olympic, maybe Olympics host site could be this stadium. It's not going to be. I've talked to Brian Bilello numerous times about this. I've got him on the record saying that if they build a stadium for the Revs, it will be specific for the Revs. It won't be an Olympic stadium host site that'd be scaled back for the Revs. They're aiming to build a 20,000 seat stadium in this area of South Boston, and it's a soccer stadium only for the Revs. Now, the other thing that bothers me is that they're talking 5 years. Brian, what's 2014 plus five?
I knew you were going to ask me a math question. I'm going to go with 2019, Tom.
2019 is correct.
Yes.
Why is it?
I had a calculator.
I mean, and granted, this sort of thing does take time, but I don't like that timetable of 2019 specifically for two reasons. One, you're going to be past the World Cup of 2018, and to be honest, if you're looking to catch the soccer market when you want to get it, strike while the iron's hot, wouldn't you want to move into your soccer-specific stadium before the before the World Cup? And the second thing that bothers me, too, is I really did think if we're talking about a soccer-specific stadium, we're talking about something much sooner than 2019, 2018. Because I think if they want to build something, they want to have it built before the 20-team expansion is complete in 2017, or 22-team, whatever it is.
Yeah, I think the one thing I would disagree with, I don't necessarily need to have my soccer-specific stadium if I'm Bob Kraft or Jonathan Kraft or whomever.
Yeah. Whatever Kraft son you want to be today.
I don't need it before the 2018 World Cup. Because right now what we're in is a World Cup year. So, you know, MLS grows, MLS wanes. So what you're going to have now is, you know, MLS is on a high right now. And
right.
It's going to dip a little. It's going to dip a little for the next 3 years. Then the World Cup's going to come back. And then if you're going to tell me that the start of the 2019 season, when people are still in a fever pitch over the 2018 World Cup, I think 2019 would actually be a pretty good idea.
You think so?
Because you're going to get the World Cup buzz. So if you can say, open it, maybe even a situation where, I don't know if this is even possible, but maybe you open it midway through the season in 2018. So maybe the Revs start 2018. So, like, such a ridiculous idea to be thinking 4 years in advance. You know, but they play half the season in Gillette, and then after the World Cup, they're like, oh, hey, look at our brand new stadium. And then you get everyone who caught the fever during the World Cup. You have all those people who are down at the Banshee and every other pub in Boston maxed out watching World Cup soccer. Now all of a sudden they're coming here. You know, that could be an actually really good marketing idea. If they use that, I want credit for it. It actually kind of works, like, if you think about it.
No, it does. You would presumably think that with the talent that's on this roster right now, if the salary cap continues to grow in this league and players are paid more, maybe you keep some of the Revs that are probably going to make international teams when they get older. It sounds like we're talking about, like, five-year-olds here. But when they get older and more seasoned, you know, you can expect probably Andrew Farrell, Kellen Rowe, God willing, Lee Wynn still playing. You know, all those guys will be representing the country. And then you go into the World Cup, and as Brian's saying, you know, you get to see those guys in Gillette. You come out of the World Cup after, and no matter what, win, lose, or draw, you're going into a new soccer-specific stadium with some of the biggest world-class players, hopefully, in the game today.
Yeah, I mean, that could be huge to double that. You know, say you have a Kellen Rowe, and he's, yeah, you know, he plays a role in the World Cup and, you know, he scores a late goal. And then, oh, hey, everyone, let's welcome back the MLS season in our new stadium with super cute Kellen Rowe, who just scored in Russia.
You love him.
I love Kellen Rowe.
You know what it is? I think it's the comb over. It's the only one that he does it well. He does do a comb over well.
He does it well.
He's also a Seattle Supersonics fan still. He hasn't yet moved over to the Thunder.
You know what? I like that, too, because the Thunder are 100 times better than the Supersonics ever were, even in their heyday with Gary Payton and Sean Kemp. Thunder are way better. And the fact that he's not giving up, I love it.
But he's not giving up on the Supersonics.
That's what I'm saying. I love it. He's not giving up on them.
Yeah, but, I mean, it's not like he's rooting for the Thunder.
No, but the Thunder's better. So, like, gotcha. Everyone else in Seattle, I don't think cares anymore. Like, they're just like, oh, whatever, our team is crap.
Yeah. They are crap. They aren't even a team. They're just an arena.
They're supposed to come back, though.
They are supposed to come back. And we're going to come back to talking about soccer again. Because
I was just enjoying talking about basketball. It's such a fun sport.
It is such a fun sport. It's better than the NFL, which has gotten extremely boring.
I was being sarcastic. The NBA is not a fun sport.
No, it's gotten better since LeBron has gone to Cleveland.
Not a fun sport.
I'm excited to see what Jurgen puts out against Ireland for the strict fact that it can't get any worse than what it was against Colombia.
I'm not as down on that Colombia game as most people.
I'm pretty down. Can I explain why I'm down right now?
Go ahead, Tom.
And you tell me why, and you tell me if I'm overshooting it. Because I'm not just going to look at one game. I'm going to look at four games. I'm going to look at a team that post-World Cup, I would have expected a lot of more fire and hunger to be considered in the world's elites. And we haven't even cracked the top 20 yet. And I am sick and tired of all these moral little victories that we as American soccer fans are beginning to accept here. Oh, yeah, we were up 1-0 versus Colombia. Oh, yeah, we were up for 80 minutes versus Colombia, the number 3 team ranked in the world, but we couldn't hold on. Oh, yeah, we had the Landon Donovan farewell. Oh, yeah, it was one of the greatest U.S. men's national team games ever on American soil. Oh, yeah, we only just drew 1-1. It's okay. We got out of the group stage but lost in a round to 16. We only went one win in the World Cup.
One note would have made that segment better if you did the Kool-Aid bit. Oh, yeah.
This is such a underperforming team. It really is an underperforming team right now. I mean, maybe I'm overshooting it just a tad bit because we're 4 years away from the World Cup. But I'm a damn perfectionist. So if I got to sit back and watch this crap for 90 minutes today and waste my time, I might just have to buy a Manchester United TV. If I'm not happy after 30 minutes, I'm buying a Man United TV subscription and paying for Messi versus Ronaldo at Old Trafford. And I'd rather watch empty seats than watch the U.S. play goddamn Ireland and lose.
So why are you okay with subpar performance from your club team, Man City? And
I'm not okay with it.
It seems to have a care across your ass about the U.S. not doing well.
No, I'm very disappointed with Manchester City. They spent oodles and oodles amounts of money to not even crack the top 5 in the world when it comes to not even top 10. They're not even in the top 10 team right now in the world, and it's absolutely pathetic. But and I could get into a whole big Manchester City rant because of how disgraceful their performance is on the European level. But the U.S., I'm keeping it with them. Their performances haven't been that much better either. And you know what? I love what Jurgen Klinsmann's done, and he's done a lot of good things. But you know what? I said this yesterday. Stop bitching and moaning about the league here at home. And start finding a way to win some games.
So I do think you're overshooting. I really do. So let's just go back, just to the World Cup, okay? And let's talk about things that the U.S. have done that's okay. And again, where you seem to be, unamused by the moral victories, it's not as a good journey. But let's go back. They started the World Cup by beating Ghana, the team that knocked them out of the two previous World Cups. That's huge to get the monkey off that back. The Portugal game, that was a huge disappointment. I'm not going to lie. That was a moment of absolute disappointment. Then you lose to Germany, the greatest international team in the world. Then you take Belgium, a team who is way better, far better of a team. They took them to the absolute limit. And yes, they did that on the back of Tim Howard, but it was still done. So far, since the World Cup, I'm only disappointed in one game, and that's a tie to Portugal. All right. The other two things that have infuriated me over the last couple of months is the two draws to Ecuador and Honduras last month.
And what are those the results of? Late game goals.
But it's also a result of a friendly where you have a lot more movement and a lot more change, like many more changes than you would in an actual game, a game that really matters where you only get the three substitutes. You know, I mean, they lost that Colombia game on the inability of Julian Green to mark his man and to win a ball in the air.
But let me
I don't think he's in that situation if you don't have six substitutes.
But let me ask you this question. You have, since the World Cup has ended, seen three or four teams that have participated recently in the
World Cup.
Okay, so wouldn't you want to do better against those teams? Winning against those teams, doesn't that mean something in terms of how you climb in the world rankings and how you're perceived by other countries? Wouldn't you want to at least make a statement in these friendly games showing I have the depth to beat you with my B squad? Imagine what I could do with my A squad.
Yeah, but unfortunately, that's not a luxury the U.S. have. The U.S. don't have an impressive B squad. And that's a huge disadvantage.
Is it that they don't have an impressive B squad, or that they don't have the resources right now? Go back to your point. I'm sorry. I didn't mean to cut you off.
So, I mean, for me, they just don't have that B squad. They have – the U.S. have talent. You know, they have the Dempseys, the Bradleys, the Jozy Altidore, you know, Kyle Beckerman – as of late, Jermaine Jones as of late, Alejandro Bedoya, they have good players. The problem is when you sub off those players, what you have is a group of younger players or a group of players that haven't had a chance to shine. Like Lee Wynn comes in for Bedoya and he does great. But where's he been for the last 7 years? He doesn't have that international experience because there's certain players that just kind of fall out of favor. And I think, too, what I'm kind of – one gripe I have with Jurgen Klinsmann over the last three games is I don't think he's really balancing the youth with the experience. And I had mentioned this before the Colombia game even happened. I'm glad that Kyle Beckerman looked great, and I'm glad he really was the player of the game. And we'll talk to Kyle about that in a few minutes. But he's 32 years old. I want to see a player like Will Trapp, like Perry Kitchen, like Amobi Okugwu. I want to see those guys out there getting the experience they need now.
Yeah.
Because I'm sick and tired of people saying players like that don't have the experience. Well, why the hell don't they? Because we're putting Kyle Beckerman out there. And again, I don't want to pick on the guy. He played great, and he really is a perfect defensive midfielder. I mean, he plays at RSL. He's great. I love Kyle Beckerman.
Great dreadlocks.
I want to see youth mixed in better. That's what I want to see.
I think Will Trapp is the perfect example, too. Perry Kitchen, perfect example of guys that, I mean, just they're the top of their classes, essentially.
Yep.
They're regarded as some of the best soccer players of their age group, so they should be playing.
They're the best. They're regarded as the best of their age group and of that position. I mean, if you think of holding midfielders in Major League Soccer, your mind is going to go to Will Trapp, mm-hmm. Perry Kitchen. You know, Okugwu, when he played there, was great. I know he's, you know, more of a center defensive player or a central defender, but you know, he still played holding midfield.
Yeah.
You know, there's a time to put the youth in, and this is the time to do it.
It's amazing that they're not, Brian. It really is confusing. Like, I don't know if I trust it. I trust Jurgen, but I think you're starting to see, and I wish I could emphasize on it more, because maybe this isn't the right way of putting it, but maybe they're starting to become blurred lines between what Jurgen's job is as coach and what Jurgen's job is as technical director.
Yeah, fair enough.
I think because those are two separate jobs. Those are two separate 8-hour days in which you are preparing for... Is it possible that you can mix it? Is it good that you're not mixing it as much? I don't know if Jurgen should be doing both. I think if you're Sunil Gulati, you got to make him pick one. I know the deal was when he came to America, Jurgen, to take this men's national team job was, I want that technical director's position, but if you're not advancing anything of U.S. soccer in the next 2 years, then you should be out, right? As technical director, at least. Because if you're not selecting the right guys, then something's bound to be fixed. And if taking power away from Jurgen might be the answer.
Yeah, they're not going to do that. I mean, they literally just made him technical director like not even a calendar year ago.
That's also true.
I mean, how many national team coaches are also the technical director? Like, I don't really pay attention to titles, so like I don't know.
I can't imagine, but I don't pay attention to titles either, and nor do I pay attention to the people that are, you know, always in those positions. You let the workers do their work, but when it's a guy like Jurgen who, you know, embraces the spotlight as much as he does, you might have to step back just a little bit and do an ego check here if you're Klinsmann.
Yeah, I don't see it happening, but
no, yeah, I'm not satisfied with these results. I'm not, and I want better. Because what was the one thing that Jurgen kept on demanding this summer, Brian?
More exciting play.
And you know what? The one thing that he harped on a lot that I remember, be critical of your players. The American public should be more critical of their players. The media should be better in being more critical about the players and the coaching and the way I do things.
Well, I'll tell you who's more critical of his players.
Jurgen
Klinsmann is the most critical of his players.
But he's not critical of all the players. He's critical of Dempsey and Bradley. He's not critical of Jones.
True.
You know, he's not going to go out in a press conference for the rest of the year and say anything bad about Jermaine Jones.
Well, ultimately, there's nothing bad to say.
But would you have said, okay, if Michael Bradley caused that inadvertent handball the other night versus Colombia and it wasn't Jones, would have Jurgen said something after the game? Yes or no?
I think if it got called, I think Jurgen probably would have.
Same situation. If it doesn't get called, Michael Bradley puts a hand on it, does Jurgen comment on it?
I don't think he cares if it's not called. I mean, that's the thing. Like, Jurgen, yeah, he's going to call you out on whatever, but ultimately, if it doesn't impact the game, I don't think Jurgen cares. I mean, he's a professional. I mean, he is really, like, an all-time great of the sport. He knows that things happen, and if it's not negatively impacting the course of the game, I don't think he gives a flying F about it, to be honest with you. And I think that if there were a dramatic decline in the abilities of Jurgen Klinsmann, of Jermaine Jones, I think he'd call him on it, to be 100% honest with you. But what you don't have is a decline with Jermaine Jones. He's getting better and better.
It's unfortunate he's not younger, though. It really is. It's unfortunate that this isn't like Jermaine Jones doing this 2 years ago. Because if we're talking about a guy that's 2 years younger, at 31 years old, he has an impact at Copa America and a possible impact at the World Cup.
Yeah, you know, it's definitely mind-boggling to me. I've said this before. I'm new on the Jurgen.
Jermaine Jones.
I'm new on the Jermaine Jones bandwagon. Like, literally, like at the start of the World Cup, I didn't want this guy on my roster. But he has impressed the hell out of me, more so than any American player this year. And he's well. I went to American Soccer Now a couple weeks ago. That website, if you don't go there, it's great for U.S. stuff. Jermaine Jones is ranked number one out of 100 top American soccer players.
You think he wins it this year?
Hmm?
Athlete of the year? U.S. Soccer's athlete of the year?
Is he even nominated? I mean, I think the
shortlist came out the other day.
I know it was. I don't care to be honest with you. I love the team, but individual awards I don't necessarily care about.
I hear you.
I think Tim Howard will win it.
He should. Tim Howard is the greatest American soccer player of all time,
except for Landon Donovan.
Yeah. All right, we can get into that debate another day.
We've already had that debate.
We've had that debate a lot.
We've had that debate
too many times.
Borg, and he shut you down.
Okay, fine. Landon's great. Let's talk to Kyle McCarthy because that was fun. All right, I think that's a good segue, sort of.
Go ahead.
All right.
If I yell real loud, do you think you'll hear me in Ireland?
We jump now to the Allied Healthcare Insurance Expert Hotline and welcome in Kyle McCarthy of Fox Sports. As promised, Kyle is in Ireland for today's international friendly between our U.S. boys and, well, God's country, Ireland. And Kyle, I mean, McCarthy, I would say that's a little bit Irish, right? Just a tad bit.
My ancestors are from County Cork, and I'm a little disappointed I wasn't able to get down there and, you know, tromp around the home. For a little bit. But it'll be interesting.
Yeah, absolutely. Tonight. It should be a fun game between the boys. Have you at least gotten a chance to see the sights at all? Have you gotten some sightseeing done?
I have.
Ah.
Downtown Dublin, and it's lovely. So definitely a couple of days.
All right, well, connection sounds a little shoddy, but we still have Kyle McCarthy here with us, so apologize for that, but we'll work through it here. When looking at tonight's game, first off, you were in Craven Cottage last Friday when the U.S. took on the Colombians. It didn't really present to be one of Jurgen's finest matches, especially since his post-World Cup era, because we've expected a style of play that Jurgen's promised that's more exciting, produces more goals, and is a tail away from the past, but it seems like we're still in the same direction. So how can the U.S. fix the problems from Friday night to tonight?
It's a gradual process, certainly, but they'll expect to see some improvement. The fact that they're playing Ireland instead of Colombia will certainly help. Mm. But first and foremost, they have to get the ball down and knock it around a little bit better than they did tonight. If they're going to play out of the back, they've got to stop launching those long balls from back to front, and they've got to have a little bit of composure on the ball. This is a game that could be played pretty frenetically, but the U.S. has got to find a way to really calm things down and really dictate the terms of the affair.
You used one of my favorite words of the weekend, deft. The U.S. needs to be more deft with the way they come out of the back. That's how you phrased it after the Colombian game. Are you concerned with Jurgen's back four formation right now, and the fact that it's not that we haven't really seen anything different, it doesn't feel like there's anything that has changed since the World Cup, at least from my perspective. Are you worried about how he can work for better games with that back four squad?
It's time to experiment, certainly, and you've seen that with Jermaine Jones playing at center back. And you've seen that with the selection choices that Klinsmann has made defensively. I think in the end, everything will come together. I think this is a natural time to really assess some options and weigh alternatives. And that's had some benefits. Certainly left back, Greg Garza has stepped in and looked pretty solid in that department. So it's an inevitable sort of thing where the U.S. is going to evaluate alternatives at this stage in the World Cup cycle. So the fact that there are a few bumps along the way is something you have to stomach.
You had a great article on Kyle Beckerman talking about how he's really the driving force in that central defensive midfield right now, just protecting the back four. I look at the crop of guys that could take over, and you mentioned a few in your article, Will Trapp being one of them. How far away are we from those new guys being worked in, and how long are we until Kyle Beckerman could possibly be removed from that role? Because at this point, it seems like anybody that gets taken out of that starting 11 has to be literally ripped off of it because they're gripping onto for dear life, it seems like.
Yeah, Beckerman played well on Friday night. He was man of the match against the Colombians, and he's going to take some displacing, certainly. The interesting thing for me is to look at how this U.S. team is going to evolve and to see whether that dedicated holding role exists in every match. There are some games where the U.S. is not going to need a true number six to really regulate things in front of the back four. The game against Colombia was certainly one of those matches where they did. In terms of that spot in the pool right now, Beckerman is probably at the top of the depth chart, but there are several players who are going to try and push their way into it. I think the January camp will be important for players like Perry Kitchen and Will Trapp to state their case.
So you would place Kyle Beckerman even over a healthy Michael Bradley? I know right now, obviously, health isn't on his side, but you would still consider him over Beckerman at this point, or Bradley over at this point?
Well, there's a caveat there, certainly, and that's Michael Bradley is featuring further up the field for Jurgen Klinsmann at this point. Klinsmann has decided that he thinks he can get the most out of Michael Bradley playing in a more advanced role. I don't necessarily agree. I think Michael Bradley is a player who should be playing deeper in midfield, and I think he'd be fantastic in that Kyle Beckerman role, but I don't know if that's in the cards at the moment.
Who would replace Bradley if everything was to go your way? If you were to have it your way, Kyle, who would you like to see slot in and replace Bradley if he was to sit back more?
Well, if Bradley sits back more, then you have to sort of adjust things accordingly. I think Mix Diskerud and Alejandro Bedoya have both shown well in recent friendlies. But that's the rub. The U.S. doesn't really have a central playmaker, the sort of guy who can unlock defenses consistently. So that's part of the reason why Klinsmann has pushed Bradley further up the field, because he thinks that Bradley, one, can pick the right pass, but two, can also start the pressure in a good area and allow the Americans to win the ball back in great spots. So it would be interesting to see how this team will evolve in that department, and it's going to be something to watch over the next 6 to 9 months.
So obviously, moving forward for tonight's game, the rosters looks a lot different. You know, no DeAndre Yedlin, no Jermaine Jones, no Lee Wynn. What do you think the U.S. can do, or what's it going to look like tonight when they play Ireland as opposed to what it looked like when they played Colombia?
There will be some changes, certainly. Two in force, certainly in defense. I'm expecting to see Jeff Cameron start. I'm expecting to see Matt Beasley start. I think Nick Raimondo could earn the start and goal as well. And there might be more changes. From this U.S. team, I'm expecting a more complete performance. I think this is a manageable test for the U.S. They are capable of beating Ireland. They've never been in Dublin, but this is a decent opportunity to go out and make a statement. So they've got to find a way to get hold of the game, keep the ball well, and then use that possession effectively going forward. There are a lot of things that they need to improve upon from Friday, but the pieces are there to really push onward and end the year on the right note.
So on Friday, Jurgen decided to go with a two-striker combo with Josie Altidore and Rubio Rubin, who actually was pretty impressive for his international debut, if you will. Do you see Jurgen going with two up top again, or do you think he's going to go back to a lone striker?
I think two up top makes a lot of sense with the way this team's constructed. There are questions about whether Rubin will be fit. He didn't train yesterday. It's supposed to be about 50-50 whether he's able to take the field tonight. And I agree. I thought there were some promising points to his first match as an American player. And I think Josie Altidore benefits from having someone alongside him. So I would not be surprised to see a second forward retained for this match.
Couple more minutes with Kyle McCarthy here, who's in Ireland for tonight's U.S. men's national team. Ireland International Friendly, which you can catch on ESPN2. looking at Jurgen's just overall composition of how he builds his teams and the mentality, I'm going to do a little psychoanalysis, a couple questions with you, Kyle, just about what Jurgen thinks about these friendlies. And, I mean, I think I saw it was either you or somebody talking about it the other day on the radio about how, you know, you want to make a big statement because it's, you know, currently, at least in FIFA rankings, it was the number three team in the world. You don't have many opportunities to always have these friendlies against these upper echelon teams. So you want to take advantage of them as much as possible, especially when it comes for a World Cup rankings down the road 4 years from now. But when do you think we're going to start seeing maybe a little bit more urgency from Jurgen Klinsmann and more of a desire to really push on in these games and just finish games? Because I think it's remarkable how many games the U.S. Go up, they have ample opportunities to improve on their score, and they don't.
It's been a pattern, certainly, during the fall, where they've had openings to really take control of games, and they've let them pass. And it's something where the U.S. needs to find a way to close out games, and this is a good opportunity for them to go out and do that. This is a game where if they're able to get the lead, they can reflect on what has gone wrong and then move forward appropriately. In terms of playing the top teams in the world, I think that's something that Klinsmann has always prioritized. This is important for world rankings, but mostly it's important to push the program forward in terms of providing a metric to gauge where this team is in comparison to the very best sides in the world. I would expect you will see more of those friendlies during this next World Cup cycle, but the results will start to get more important as you approach the CONCACAF Gold Cup next year.
You're around the press conferences a lot when these international breaks come up. You're always at training. Have you seen a change in atmosphere? Have you seen anything different from when we began the last World Cup cycle?
Well, it's tough for me to compare because I've only been really around the team for the past few months. But for me, I think that there's a good energy about the side at the moment. Everyone is focused on the task at hand, but not so focused that they can't perform. It's the right sort of energy. The question is how you translate what you're doing off the field onto what you need to do to get the result. And I know it's a friendly, and I know results don't necessarily matter in friendlies, but for this team and for what's been unfolding over the past few months, it would be good for them to end the year with the right sort of result for morale and to go into a busy 2015 on the right note.
So, you know, we're talking about the year as a whole right now. You know, how would you rate this year? So this is going to be the last game the U.S. plays in 2014. Overall, rate Jurgen Klinsmann as a coach in 2014.
Wow, that's a good question. It's a difficult question. If we're grading on a A to F scale, I would give this year a B. I think it's been a learning process for the Americans for much of this year, trying to figure out how to go to Brazil with the right mentality, how to perform when you're in that World Cup, and how to your objective. And there were some issues certainly with the performances in Brazil, but when you look at an egg 16, I think you have to be satisfied with that. And the post stretch, I think there have been some positives and some negatives. But I think for the most part, useful as he's trying to this program for. I think when you look at the tumult in the build up to the World Cup, there was a lot of intrigue at the World Cup, and there was a lot of work done. So I think if you look at, I think a B, it's been a and what could.
Yeah, so it was kind of in and out there. Sorry. You know, I did get the gist of what you're saying, and I think that a B is definitely a pretty solid grade. You know, just breaking it down, not that it really matters. They finished 6-4-3 in all their games. So it's not that bad. I mean, if you think about it, they did play some high-quality teams. They lost to, you know, Germany and Colombia. But the, overall, yeah, they had a pretty solid year.
So, yeah, he's Kyle McCarthy of Fox Sports. Love to have him on longer, but it sounds like the international connection's drying up, and so is the beer, so we don't want that to happen. So we want to make sure that Kyle's all ready for work. Don't be too drunk, though, when you get into the gantry, all right?
I'll try to avoid it.
No, I know. It's always good. Conference finals coming up this week, so we'll be excited to see what you got for New York and New England when you get back stateside. Kyle McCarthy of Fox Sports. Great as always. Thank you very much, sir. We're arguing here. Brian saying he didn't tweet me this morning. He definitely tweeted me this morning. I'm looking at his tweet that says, at Brian underscore speaks, at Podcast Invaders. No. Look at this link.
No. I definitely didn't do that.
Well, it's Tuesday.
I've been hacked.
It's the return of the week, and it's our weekly check-in with our new favorite segment on the show, Pitch Invasion of the Week.
So this week, we have two pitch invasions.
Dos
pitch invasions. Our first pitch invasion comes from the second division of American soccer.
The NASL.
The mighty, mighty North American Soccer League, who this weekend had their soccer bowl. Yes, they call it a soccer bowl.
Not the Super Bowl.
Like the Super Bowl.
But better. It's the soccer bowl.
Way less attended than the Super Bowl.
Halftime show is presented by Stevie Nicks.
But still extremely fun, nonetheless, where the San Antonio Scorpions beat the Fort Lauderdale Strikers. I forgot who it was, to be perfectly honest.
Sugar Ray sang the national anthem.
I always confuse the Strikers and the Tampa Bay Rowdies for some reason. So the San Antonio Scorpions won 2-1. Pretty exciting game, honestly. The goals, especially from the San Antonio side, were incredible. The first goal was a nice bicycle kick that, you know, it's always fun to see a nice bicycle kick.
Nice little bike.
So the fans, the Crocketeers, if you will, they invaded the pitch. It was a pitch invasion gone right. No harm.
No harm.
No foul.
No flames. No flares.
Yeah, well documented. It almost seemed like the NASL was kind of like, let it happen. Also, apparently, Tom, I'm going to have you read that article because I literally did not send you that article.
San Antonio Scorpions, too. Hopefully would they come to MLS. Hopefully MLS expands to San Antonio. I would love a Texas three-step.
Here's a little rant. I am so extremely sick and tired of teams like the San Antonio Scorpions or Sacramento Republic FC saying, hey, look, we're doing everything we can do here. Accept us into your league. It's bullshit. I hate it. I'm sick of it.
Why?
Be in the NASL. Do everything you can there. Prove it more. Like, what really have the San Antonio Scorpions done? They had 4,000 people go to the soccer bowl.
But what is the
4,000 people.
But what is the premier soccer division in America right now?
What's going to make you money? Make NASL better, then.
How do you make NASL better?
Do it better.
Is that you on U.S. soccer or on NASL?
It's on NASL.
So they have to expand. They have to get out of just, you know, a 10-team league that they're in right now.
They have way more than 10 teams. I think they have like 13 teams this season coming up.
13.
1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6.
It's not that much still. It's nowhere near the MLS.
13. That's a great guess.
Here's our pitch invasion gone wrong, though. It's always nice to have one that goes right, and then one that goes wrong. And this one came after the Colombia-U.S. game at Craven Cottage. Soccer by Ivis. Ivis Galarsep had this. And this is tweeted out by Bleacher Report. From Brian to me, Colombian and Real Madrid superstar James Rodriguez is a popular man for a good reason. Going down the article, there was a fan that ran onto the pitch towards James Rodriguez, and the security pounced on the man before he could get to Rodriguez. So before he could get to James Rodriguez, the security stewards have already taken this pitch invader away. James Rodriguez comes over and tells the security to take it easy. USA was able to get a breather because it happened during the game, but this guy gets taken down as he's running towards Rodriguez, and at least James gets this, you know, security. It just goes, hey, take care. Take easy of him, all right?
He should have signed an autograph.
You know, I don't, but Jaimez, you know what? I think the new debate's going to be, you know what the new debate's going to be? It's not going to be Bale versus Neymar. It's going to be Rodriguez versus Neymar. You have Ronaldo Messi right now. The next great soccer rivalry, I think, in Spain, if those two players stay in their respected clubs, Rodriguez versus Neymar.
My money's on Rodriguez.
My money's on Neymar. That's fine. I go with the Catalonians every single time.
That's fine. He's from Brazil.
I go, but do you take Ronaldo or Messi?
I take Messi in that situation.
I take Messi, too. So you're not completely, you know, we don't completely disagree with each other.
This is solely based on the individual, not the player, not the team they play on, because ultimately the team they play on is marginal at best because someone's going to pay him more money and he's going to go somewhere else. Although I don't really know who offers more money than Barcelona, other than Real Madrid.
AC Milan? No. They don't have that money anymore. That's all. Yeah. Bye-bye. Thanks a lot, Mario Balotelli. So, completes day two of podcasting. Little Billy Joel to start off, finish the Tuesday. I'm in a specific state of mind, and it's not just New York. It's the conference finals.
It's not soccer-specific.
It's not just soccer-specific either.
I'm in a soccer-specific state of mind. Tweet that out. Hashtag soccer-specific
state of mind. We will have another podcast for you on Thursday and Friday of this week leading into the Eastern Conference Finals and Western Conference Finals as well. We're going to try to get Ivis Galarsep on. He's over in Ireland, so we'll try to get him on. And then Friday, hopefully, I'm working on some other fun stuff as well. Maybe a surprise if we can get Brian.
I have a job, guy.
You have a job, yeah. A jack guy. I'm a jab guy.
That's the Boston accent.
That's unfortunate. All right, bro. Hopefully, we'll return on Friday, Thursday as well. So, stay tuned to the Twitter page. Follow Brian on Twitter at Brian_Speaks. Follow Willie Football at Willie Football.
And don't forget to tweet out hashtag soccer-specific state of mind.
Soccer-specific state of mind. That's what we're in today.
To the New England at NE Revolution.
At any revolution. At any revolution, soccer-specific state of mind.
Let them know.
I wonder what state of mind Brian Bolello's in, because that man has not slept in at least 2 months.
I think he's in a Movember state of mind.
He is. Follow the Twitter at Podcast Invaders. We'll see you. Bye.
Be sure to follow the podcast on Twitter at Podcast Invaders. And don't miss out on all the soccer action on 1510 WUFC. Till next time, this has been the Pitch Invaders Podcast.
I'm in a New York state of mind.